research is painting social media in a mostly negative light. The American Psychiatric Association found about a third of adults think Facebook, Twitter, Instagram hurts our mental health.
And mental health campaigner Niall Brezzy Breslin has stressed to an Oireachtas Health Committee that mental health issues are the great epidemic of this generation.
50% of teens report that they feel addicted to their cell phones. A new study in the Journal of Child Development shows nighttime usage of cell phones can increase anxiety and depression in teenagers.
If we take social media, a past study by Chicago University Booth Business School found that it could be even more addictive than cigarettes or alcohol.
I wake up and I get my phone and I open Facebook and I started checking the news, memes. It's really hard to stop. I feel ashamed about it.
I go on very regularly, so it's like many, many times a day. The first time I check it will be pretty much the second I wake up, it'll be the first thing I do. And then the last time I'll be looking at it is before I go to sleep, I suppose.
On average, I probably spend like maybe 4 or 5 hours. It's actually really bad. I have a screen time management thing that tells me how long I'm on different apps. As I say this, I'm like, I might be addicted to my phone. that's so terrible.
Social media, one of the most amazing creations of this generation. We like, swipe, tag, subscribe, follow and unfollow. It's a great networking tool, but with hundreds of hours spent online, some are either ignorant or pay no attention to its addictive nature. Research says over 210 million people suffer from internet and social media addictions worldwide. Today, apps like Facebook and Instagram are being used by young people mostly in pursuit of validation and fame, and this can come with a price.
The brain is not designed to be switched on 24/7. We have to have downtime. We have to be able to process and assimilate all of the learning and stimulus of our day, the experiences, what went well, what didn't go well, what can we learn from that, how could we do it differently.
That's clinical psychotherapist Joanna Fortune. She spoke to me on how social media can interrupt the functioning of the brain.
If you're constantly engaged, you don't get that opportunity to process. So actually that can lead to heightened levels of anxiety because you're in a state of hyperstimulus and anticipatory arousal. When am I going to get a message back? Has that person read my message? Why haven't they replied? You know, that the, you know, on a phone, the dot, 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 or so-and-so is typing is probably the most stressful thing for somebody, because if that stops, they're like, what happened? So the brain is on constant alert, like being in meerkat mode, and that's definitely not good for mental health and well-being.
My name is Joseph Oko, and social media consumes my day. Over the last 3 months, I've been digging into the social media behavior of young adults, and I spent time chatting to 18 to 24-year-olds, and quickly found out that for many of them, putting their lives on the internet is all about a new currency, the social media currency, the likes. It's all about the likes.
The likes I used to get were never enough. It doesn't matter if I got 5 or 500 or 5,000, it's not enough. I need more, I want more. I felt the need to keep posting all the time, and my privacy was completely gone.
That's the voice of Amanda, who was diagnosed with anxiety in 2015 due to excessive social media use.
I used to spend a lot of time in it, and it usually made me feel bad because there was a lot of comparing myself with other people, comparing my life. And in the end, I felt really bad because I can't have what this person have. I don't have that life. I'm not traveling like that person. I'm not pretty like her.
Are you on Facebook?
Oh, yes, I'm on Facebook. I'm still on Facebook.
Is Facebook any better?
It's not better, but I just didn't delete it yet because I feel like I would lose contact with many people that I know. And I try to change my feed to not get overwhelmed, to not get all of these. The same I used to get on Instagram, like just pictures of people living their best lives. So I kind of changed my feed a bit and I get loads of memes and dog pictures, that kind of stuff.
But Amanda isn't the only one attached to the wired world.
My name is Kieran Samahedi. I'm 18. I use Snapchat the most. TikTok's always good. Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook would be my favorites, I suppose. They're the ones I'd use most often. I like Snapchat because I can use it to talk to my friends, especially in this current climate where not that long ago we weren't able to go and meet each other. It was nice to be able to talk to them. I like TikTok because it's entertaining. I like Facebook because of how I can get information on it.
How attached are you?
My social media use went up a lot when the pandemic started. The other day, me and my friend were looking at our app usage on our phones. I think it was, like, at that point, I'd done maybe 3 hours on Snapchat, 2 hours on TikTok, a couple of hours, and was an hour or two on Facebook.
Kieran's story is similar to the ones I heard again and again from youngsters. Not one of them could go 4 straight hours in a day without checking their phones. This revelation prompted me to self-reflect on my own social media addiction.
I posted a video the other day and I keep staring at the screen waiting for a light to pop up and say, people liked the link you shared, people liked your photo, comments, loads of love, this is amazing. You expect people to interact with it.
In 2019, data from EU's official statistical office, Eurostat, showed that almost 9 in 10 Europeans between the age of 16 and 24 are on social media. Back to clinical psychotherapist Joanna Fortune, whose specialty is in child and adolescent psychotherapy. Joanna has spent over 15 years working with young adults.
We are seeing a lot of younger people owning social media accounts and involved in problematic internet use these days.
Yeah.
What's the attraction?
I think it's because it's a break from the real world. I think you can create a new sense of self, a new identity. You can hide parts of yourself that you don't like being seen or that you haven't felt comfortable with yourself. And you can find connections with like-minded people online. I think it's a way of feeling that you are connected, even if you're sitting alone in your bedroom. And I think that's why it's so attractive. I think as well, though, that there is that mindless quality to social media, that you're just kind of scrolling, not really having to think or engage, all the parts of your brain or self, and that it's a bit of escapism.
Joanna tells me while social media could be contributing to our overall mental health issues, but not necessarily the cause of it.
We say, does social media trigger mental health challenges or problems? The answer is kind of yes, kind of no, which is really difficult when you're in an area of research, when you want to kind of does it or doesn't it answer. And the reality of it is it's the manner in which social media is used. That's the key determining factor in its impact on mental health. And that's for adults, by the way, as well as young people. Other variables definitely matter because I would say social media alone cannot cause mental health problems. But if you are already vulnerable or predisposed or experiencing a challenge to your mental health or well-being, then prolonged or problematic internet use is not going to help and is likely to amplify that problem. But that doesn't mean it caused the problem. I think sleep is one of the biggest impacts on mental health that can be associated with social media use, particularly problematic social media use. People who spend the night checking their social media, who stay up late at night doing it, maybe put it down, maybe wake in the middle of the night and the first thing they do is check their phone, maybe initially to look at the time, but now that the phone's in my hand, I'm flicking into my social media. Those people are actually more likely to suffer from a mood disorder and to self-rate themselves as unhappy, lonely, even depressed than people who actually turn their phones off at night.
Okay. So what all of the neuropsychiatric research recommends is approximately 10 p.m. cutoff for your phone use.
So despite the negative effects that comes with prolonged social media use, it's a mono spinner for some, like social media influencers. I visited the Dublin home of internet star James Kavanagh for a chat. As a fan myself, it was fascinating to meet James.
Hey, good to see you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is my house.
Since 2015, James has had a steady rise in popularity.
Guys, welcome to sunny Thailand. Not so much, we're actually in Dublin. I'm here with our travel ambassador, James, who is freshly bronzed.
Welcome to Making a Cup of Tea with me, James Kavanagh.
He now has over 130,000 followers on Instagram and over 41,000 followers on Twitter. In James's world, every click can turn to money, so the need to engage keeps him busy. This is the kind of life many youngsters aspire for.
Can I see your workspace?
Sure. So this is my kind of my workstation.
It's a small section in a sitting room.
I have it by my window so I can watch people going by and get inspired. But because what I do, it doesn't require a lot of stuff, but I have a good camera, a Canon camera, which has the ability to make videos or take pictures. So I use that sometimes when I'm making videos that are more involved, or there's more to them than just a phone. I have a MacBook Air, which I have iMovie on that as well, so I would edit from that. And then that's kind of all the bits and bobs I have. I would use Instagram a lot. I still have Snapchat just because I find it hard to let go. I use Twitter, I use Facebook, and then for kind of making little films or little movies and stuff, I use iMovie to edit all my video content. It's really handy, it's on my phone. And so they would be the kind of apps I use kind of all the time.
How did it all begin?
It started off on Snapchat. I was kind of recording my day-to-day life. I was scaring William a lot, and those kind of little videos went a bit viral. So it all began on Snapchat, and then I just kind of started to do it more and more. Then I went on to Instagram and started to kind of share my life on Instagram stories, and like that, just people found my life interesting. And I've been making a living off it for about kind of 3 to 4 years now, and that's just kind of my full-time job. So it opened a lot of doors. I do a lot of different type of work. I would spend maybe close to 9 hours a day on my phone. You know, the way you can track it. So I'd spend like eight and a half to 9 hours a day on my phone. I'm trying to reduce that because I don't think it's very healthy to be on your phone that often.
So can you describe a typical day in the life of James Kavanagh?
Yeah, well, it depends as I said before, I host things. So, you know, before COVID happened, I might be hosting an event somewhere for a company or doing this or doing that. I do a good bit on TV. So my life is kind of a bit upside down now because of COVID. I'm not doing all these real life things, but generally, like, I would get up. We have a food company together called Curabini. So we would do a lot of kind of cooking videos. A day in the life of me is kind of, it depends on exactly what I'm doing that day. I have an agent who looks after all my jobs and that kind of thing.
What's been of interest to me is that the way young people have engaged with the web has changed over the years. The social media space is so dynamic and sometimes it's difficult to keep up with new technologies. For example, TikTok is one of the most downloaded mobile apps and kept youth engaged during the pandemic. Youths continue to find creative ways to make money from some of these platforms. Meet my friend Paula.
I'm Paula. I'm 23 and I am a digital content creator. I've been online for a decade. I joined social media as it was
in 2010. So it's been a while. I have seen the internet grow. I've grown with the internet. I was a child. I'm not a child anymore. And I've grown I've grown up online. So it's interesting.
I've known Paula for quite a while, and most times we communicate via social media. She's totally aware of its addictive nature.
I have a screen time management thing that tells me how long I'm on different apps. And I've been working over the last maybe 2-3 months to reduce the amount of time I spend on Instagram and Twitter. And I've successfully done that. So I am on them a lot less, but it's still quite high. So I would say between 4 hours on average over the whole day, like several times I'll just dip in and out of the app. It actually sounds so bad when I say it out loud, but yeah, probably around 4 hours at the moment.
I've always wondered if content creators get anxious for every post they put out, and if what they put up online is a real version of themselves. So I asked Paula and James.
I wouldn't say I get anxious when I post stuff online. Mainly because, again, like I tell myself that social media is social media and the real world is the real world. So for me, they're very distinct, different places. And also, like I said, it's not the be all and end all of everything for me. So I wouldn't say I get anxious, but I'm definitely the type of person that if I haven't got likes in 5 minutes, I'm deleting the post and I'm trying again. I know it's kind of a interesting thing because mentally I know that this is not it's not that important, but at the same time I still want to check the engagement. I still want to see if people are enjoying the content that I've spent time thinking about or creating, especially with my captions. A lot of the time I'm known for writing super long captions that I'm like, I hope people are actually reading these captions. So I really want to check in the comments or with the likes if people are engaging with what I'm trying to say.
I think that's what a lot of people would see if they follow me, that me, I'm just this happy person nonstop, but I'm not. I go to low points as well, but I just don't put up those. But I always think it's important, and I do talks in schools and stuff, and some kids will come up and say, oh, I want to do what you're doing, or how do you become an influencer, how do you get a following? And you know, if you just want to have a following for no good reason, that's not where you should be. You should, like, I wanted to just share funny videos and do my life. I didn't think a lot of people would follow me because of that. So I think it's important to just concentrate on the content and not really look at like numbers and stuff like that, because then you're in it for the wrong thing.
I also asked Joanna the best way to handle this.
Worked with influencers who are feeling quite burnt out, actually, social media fatigue, the constant demand, the taking, you know, of dozens and dozens of photos to find the one that's going to work. And all of that posting is by saying, what areas of your life do you keep away? What areas of your life are just for you? And if the answer is nothing, then let's find something you can reclaim for yourself, so that your who you are online is not, it's not so much who you are, but what you do. There are other parts of who you are that don't go online. I actually think it's important that every bit of our life is not up there, but we have something that only people in our real world know, because that teaches us a value, that the people who are active in our real world, they're different to the people who are online.
Not everyone sets out to spend hours online. Like Joanna pointed out, it could be our obsession for perfection. Other times, it starts with one click, leading to another click and more clicks. Are we asking the wrong questions by focusing more on users instead of the designers of these technologies themselves? Here is what Alex Cooney, the CEO of CyberSafe Ireland, thinks. The not-for-profit organization works to empower children, parents and teachers to navigate the online world in a safe and responsible manner.
To keep our attention, you know, to stay on them for as long as possible, to share as much as possible. There's all sorts of, you know, design elements that encourage those things. And, you know, like, why do we feel like it's really hard to stop playing a game? Well, because it's designed to make you want to keep going and you know, not to leave. And, you know, why is social media, generally social media platforms are set to, you know, to be public by default? You know, again, it's this openness, this, you know, encouraging you to share and to engage with others. You know, really, in my head and you know, lots of people's heads, it should be private. You know, we shouldn't have to go in and set that to private. You know, that's something we need to learn from the get-go. Like, it should be set to private by default. But anyway, so the design of these platforms is very much facilitated to engage our attention, to keep our attention, to get us staying on there for as long as possible, sharing as much as possible, spending money in some cases.
The Addiction Center describes social media addiction as a behavioral addiction that is characterized as being overly concerned about social media, driven by an uncontrollable urge to log on or to use social media, and devoting so much time and effort to it that it impairs other important life areas. But social media is so ingrained into our own lives, it can really be difficult to set limits on screen time. We can easily become addicted without being aware. Joanna, discuss with me the signs to look out for.
If you find that the only communication you have in your life is virtual, that's problematic. If you find that your hours of engagement online, it's what you do with most of your time, that's problematic. If you find you're not sleeping and maybe you're gaining weight or losing weight because you're forgetting to eat, whatever it is, if it is pervasive in your life to the detriment of the quality of your life and relationships in your life, it is certainly meeting threshold for problematic internet use.
Having interacted with close to a dozen young adults while making this documentary, I noticed a common pattern among all of them. They are so in love with social media. Social media has a big impact on many issues affecting youth today, and it's got a grip on all of us. But the internet is not going anywhere soon. It's still very much relevant in our world today. So, who really should take greater responsibility over social media use?
It's really about being able to bear that anticipation. You know, has somebody answered me? Have they not? You know what, you can wait till tomorrow. And so it is about taking that control. I think that's something that you have to do as a conscious decision. I think as a young person, that's a little bit more difficult to actually say, because you're saying, well, actually, that's literally how my friends communicate. So if I disengage, I am disconnecting, and that sounds awful. I would talk to parents about agreeing, not doing this to their teenagers, because I think that's actually counterproductive, but agreeing that the family internet, the Wi-Fi, will be turned off at a certain time. And that affects everybody. I think sometimes the grown-ups can struggle with that, by the way, as much as the young people in the house. But I think it's about taking kind of overt control and saying, I am going to limit my social media apps. I'm going to turn off the Wi-Fi. I'm going to whatever it is. And then actually trying to compensate with that time. Instead of saying, I won't be online, reframe that to, what will you be doing? So, because I think if we keep saying, I won't spend time online, we're actually telling ourselves what we don't want to do. And that's actually like saying, don't touch the red button, and all you want to do is push the red button. So instead, I would say, I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to meet somebody. I'm going to phone somebody and actually speak with them using words, not emojis, on the phone. I'm going to do some baking. I'm going to cook a meal. I'm going to talk to a member of my family. I'm going to get outside and do some exercise. I'm going to go for a swim. Whatever it is, you know, that's going to be very personal. Whatever it is works once you positively reframe it in terms of what you will be doing rather than what you won't be doing.
Privacy will be a bigger issue in the future, and the need for greater privacy, along with things like the ethical design of apps as part of the kind of very design structure of any new apps and games being rolled out, that will address things like privacy and user safety in the design. I'd like to think also that regulation, and I think that it will be the case that social media companies will be subject to regulation in nationally or at the European level, or wherever else, the US, Australia, and so on. I think privacy will be a bigger issue as we move forward. I think regulation will be in there, so there'll be greater onus on the companies to ensure that illegal and harmful content is removed. I hope ethical design is a much bigger focus in the future.